I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. David C. Jones joins me now, the actor, writer, filmmaker, among many other occupations, directs a new production, Heathers, the musical. It is the Canadian debut of the musical based on the 1988 film. It runs at the York Theatre from the 6th through to the 17th of January, 2016. I'll get Mr. Jones to tell us about the show, about its genesis, and the show's cast. We'll also touch on the casting and the themes in the show, high school and the 1980s for two. Visit davidcjones.ca and tickets.theculch.com for tickets and information. David C. Jones is a recipient of a 2015 Vancouver Pride Legacy Award. We talk a few days before Christmas, December 2015. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, David Jones. Mr. Jones, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, yourself?
I'm okay. It's been a whirlwind getting this show up. It's such a big show.
Yeah, especially with the holidays and that. I mean, it just must compound everything.
Yeah, and we're doing it as an equity co-op, meaning it's a professional show. Everyone's a producer on the show. Mm-hmm. But because it's a co-op, it means everyone's only getting paid out of a portion of the box office. And so people had to take other jobs. So we were often missing cast members. People were just in the air a lot of times.
Yeah. So it is a large cast, isn't it?
17 people.
Wow.
Yeah. It was no problem finding people to audition for this show because it's a fantastic score. It's a brand new script. Came out in 2014. And when Laurie walked up the rise and we said, we're auditioning, we had 181 people right away going, I want in.
Wow.
Yeah. We narrowed it down to 76, and then we narrowed it down to 30, and then we narrowed it down to 17.
Well, because there's an ongoing discussion in the theatrical community in this town about casting and diversity in the casting process. Why was it important for you to have the cast that you have, the 17 that you have, the 17 players that will be on stage at the York, reflect the community?
That's an issue that came to my attention when I was serving as an elected member of the Equity Council. A member charged that there was an undeclared racism in casting. Now, she was being very adamant about it, that it was out-and-out racism. Three council members, advisor, investigated it, because we were like, I don't think it's overt racism. Mm-hmm. I think it might be negligent, but it might not necessarily be overt. And that's when it really came apparent, because we looked at the casting practices and went, holy crap, you're right. Like, a lot of the theaters in this town, the only place where you can have an all-white experience in Vancouver is when you walk through theater doors. And sometimes the stage goes all Caucasian. And theater is supposed to hold a mirror up to society and reflect what it sees. So Vancouver is 52% non-Caucasian. So who are we reflecting when we put an all-white cast on stage? If you'll indulge me, I give another quick example.
Yeah, please
that.
Do. Yeah.
Okay. So if we say that stories like Charlotte's Web or Rent or Glass Menagerie have universal themes in them that touch people in ways that they can relate them to their own lives. If you went to Japan or Brazil or Botswana and saw a production of Glass Menagerie, Rent, or Charlotte's Web, would you be at all surprised to see an all-Black or an all-Asian or an all-Hispanic cast doing the show? Probably not. And then you'd be able to surmise that that audience could probably get those themes from Rent, Glass Menagerie, or Charlotte's Web deeper, because they see people who look like them in that experience.
Yeah.
So that same thing holds true when we come to Canada, which is a very multicultural place. If you want the audience to take away something from the show and be really touched by the themes in the show, they have to see themselves and their world on stage. And it's not just the Asian or Latino or Black community, because the Caucasian community is also interacting, riding on the bus with, working with, marrying people of color. So when you present an all-Caucasian thing, who are you speaking to?
Yeah.
So that was something that was all I learned. It was not my belief system before I was an advisor, and I investigated this and went, oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah, we're seeing in New York, I guess the big hit there is Hamilton.
And the
guy that plays George Washington is a Black guy, and I think, at least from what I've read of that show, it's not a big deal. And I think we're I don't know if tipping point is the right word, but I mean it's certainly you're seeing a change in how thing. I mean we still have a long ways to go, especially in this town, elsewhere, Hollywood, New York, but there is a bit of a change, and we're seeing it oh so slowly.
Yeah, and I think too it's changing language, because there's sometimes I've met with people and talk with them, and sometimes people say, well, I don't see color when I do casting. And it's like, well, no. You have to. You have to see color. Because that's sometimes the excuse, right? Or there's also the thing where, and I'm sorry, I'm probably, a lot of people are going to beat me up in the parking lot for this, but sometimes the excuse is, well, we just want the most talented people. Shouldn't we cast talent? And it's like, no, but then you're saying that there's no Black or Asian people who are talented.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And that's not what they mean to say.
No.
So we were, I was very conscious in casting this. I knew that if I was going to have a female lead who was Caucasian, because we approached Christine Quintana to be in it, that I needed to have a non-Caucasian JD. Now that's going to piss off a lot of white actors who are like, oh, I really want to play JD. But it's like, well, I'm sorry, I'm not casting it for you, I'm casting it for the city.
Yeah. What, because I haven't seen this film, I guess it has Winona Ryder in it, is that right?
Yeah, Winona Ryder and Christian Slater were in it in 1988.
Yeah, and so this was I don't know if big hit is the right word, but I mean, it's certainly a cult hit. A lot of people like this film.
It was a cult hit, and one of the things I think you find is if you talk to people who are in their 40s and up, what happens is they if you mention Heathers, you get one of three responses. Oh, never heard of it.
Yeah.
You get others who go, oh my gosh, I love that film. Like, they get so emphatic.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, meet one person who goes, oh, that was a really weird film. But the, oh, that's a really weird film is a very small minority. The majority who have seen it love it. But it is a very dark comedy. It's a dark version of Mean Girl. Mean Girl's got its idea, I would suspect. There's lots of YouTube videos that compare the two. But it goes much darker because people die in this one.
So is it a violent show then?
Yeah. One person gets poisoned, and two people get shot. I'm not going to say who though.
Yeah.
So there's moments, and then there's little moments of relief, right? As the person dies, you there's a laugh that comes in right afterwards. But of course, there's a very dark laugh because you're like, oh my gosh. She's dead. Yeah. Oh, that's funny though.
Yeah.
Right. So it's taking, you know, when you were a teenager and you were being picked on or bullied and you were like, well, I wish they were dead. Well, Heathers lets you live out that. Right. So
is that one of the reasons why you like the movie?
Well, it's a little bit of both. It's a wicked film. It's a wicked, sexy film. But if you like the darkness, and you get that it's a story, right, then you find it, amusing. And the journey that happens, of course, it's sort of like Ebenezer Scrooge, right? I mean, we're past the Christmas season now, but, you know, Scrooge is a nasty person who does horrible things, and by the end, he's redeemed. Well, Heathers has a beautiful, happy ending. Sorry to be spoiler alert. So we have to go through this really dark stuff to get to the beauty, to get to the beautiful.
As much in life, isn't it?
Totally. And, you know, you got this microcosm of all these high school students who are all just trying to survive, right? High school back in 89 and back in 88, actually, and as well as now, is still like this trial by fire we throw. Good luck, we'll see you in 12 years.
Yeah. It's funny about high school, and I mean, it is the worst, it can be for most people, it is the worst time of life, and it because it's these years where they're your formative years, and if it gets screwed up, it can really get screwed up.
Yeah, it could really scar you, your experiences in high school. So that's why this movie and this musical is almost cathartic, right? You see the mean girls, you see the horrible bullies, You see the people just trying to navigate and survive. In one of her songs, she goes, "If I'm not dead by June," as the school, the Thunderdome. And you can go, yeah, that was totally my experience too. I totally tried to avoid those people because I didn't want them to pick on me or stuff me in a locker or anything.
Yeah.
So, I think it's very relatable.
Yeah, and you're a child of the 80s, and you obviously like this film. So was this personal then for you to want to do this?
Oh, yes. Everything from the fashions. I told the designers, I want to tip our, obviously we're in the 80s, but I don't want us to send up the 80s.
Mm.
The 80s send themselves up. You don't have to make the shoulder pads 5 feet high. They just have to have shoulder pads in them. Don't make it a parody. But yeah, we have all the and it's 89. The play actually takes place 1 year later than the movie does.
I see.
In the movie, they were juniors in 1988, and in the play, they're seniors in 1989. I think they did that because of casting.
Yeah. The music, I mean, this isn't a Gershwin score, obviously, or sound like one. What sort of music is it?
It's a real rock and roll soundtrack. There's a beautiful power ballads. The Heather's song is called Candy Store, and I encourage people to look it up. Heather's the musical Candy Store, and see them singing about the philosophy on life. A lot of the songs are incredibly funny. The two bullies sing a song. Sorry, it gets a little racy, kids. They sing a song about getting blue balls and needing relief. It's got a real powerful power soundtrack. Because I am a teacher at the Vancouver Film School, some of the students came in and watched a rehearsal, and the next day they go, "I can't get that one song out of my head." Right. So it's a very powerful dynamic, which is, I think, one of the reasons why so many people wanted to be in it.
Yeah, and it's a new show, you said, you think that it'll be one of these things we'll leave the theater humming some of the tunes in it?
Totally, yeah. Totally. Particularly the love ballad. Our two leads have two, when they're high and mighty, they're singing a song called Our Love is God, uh-huh. Which is, you know, they're pious, you know, our new plan, and then when they're a little bit more in the conflict of the story, they sing a song called 17, and I guarantee you, you'll be leaving singing 17 when you leave the theater.
Well, what's it like, I don't know if you're in the space already, putting the show on at the York, I mean, that's a...
Yeah, we've just moved in.
Yeah.
And the space, the York is a beautiful theater.
Uh-huh.
It's a challenging theater because this is a 17-member cast. There's 42 scenes in the show or something like that. 29 scenes. And we have a lot of set pieces and costume changes. Almost everyone's playing more than one character. And so the wing space at the York is not huge. So I've told the entire cast to go on diets. It's just not space. but it's a beautiful space, and there's no bad seats in the house. Your listeners should know the ticket price changes as the run goes on. They've already missed out on the discount tickets, so they're over now. But the first week of the run, the tickets are $30 each.
Uh-huh.
And in the second week of the run, the tickets go up to $40 each. Sort of like what the Arts Club is doing now with the progressive ticket or dynamic ticket pricing.
Yeah.
So the longer you wait, the more expensive the tickets get.
Yeah, that's the thing about theater in this town. There were a number of things in the fall that, you know, I waited too long to missed out on because these things sell out quickly, don't they?
Yeah, but, well, particularly Vancouver likes to wait to the last minute.
Yeah.
And so the Arts Club started doing this. I think they got the idea from New York, whereas if you went, I think they started with Dreamgirls. I'm talking a little bit off the top of my head here. But if you went and saw Dreamgirls in the first 2 weeks, it would have been $40. If you waited and went, oh, I'm going to go see that Dreamgirls I heard so much about. It's closing this weekend. The tickets were now $99.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, so it would sell out. But it would also make up all the money that they lost when right. No one was coming at the front end of the run.
Yeah. This show, Heather's, the musical, is this for all ages? I mean, especially if you're in high school, do you think high school kids
high school kids would love it.
Yeah.
they might want to get permission from their parents to see it.
Right.
Or they might not want to tell them. Only, like, the lyrics can be a little explicit. Uh-huh. I mean, adults will be able, and 40-somethings will be able to go, oh, yeah, no, I remember talking like that. The co-op is called Gently with a Chainsaw, but we left off the front word of that sentence. So the characters have blank me gently with a chainsaw.
Yeah. So I haven't seen the film, but I can imagine what that first word was.
What the missing word is.
Yeah.
So they're teenagers, so they talk and act like teenagers. There's a song where they sing called Big Fun, where they're all at a pool party, and they're, you know, talking about doing drugs and drinking and fornicating. Also, they don't use the word fornicate. And you're watching it, and you're like, yeah, I remember being a teenager, and the parents are away, and they left the liquor cabinet unlocked. I remember that.
Yeah.
And the teenagers will probably love it. Little kids, it's probably not best for them unless you have a good relationship with the child. You go, we're going to talk about some things that you're going to go through later.
Yeah, yeah.
I think grandma would love it because she would go, yep, that's what being a kid is.
Yeah. You know, I wondered when I introduced you a few minutes ago how to introduce you, because you have so many sort of jobs and we know you in different sort of ways.
Yeah.
So when people ask you what you do, what do you tell them?
When I went to film a documentary in India, I came up with a business card, and I hope this doesn't sound pretentious, but on the business card I put audience engagement specialist.
That makes sense, yeah.
Because everything I do pertains to an audience. I'm very shy at parties, but if you put me in front of an audience, whether I'm making a film and showing it to the audience, or putting on a play or presenting stuff, so like I was the entertainment manager for the Winter Olympics, it was all about what would delight the audience, what would surprise the audience, what would move the audience. That's my superpower.
Yeah. Well, why do you think it's, because I've talked to performers over the years, and you know, I obviously know of performers from what I've seen on television and film. The good ones don't do well with one person or a small crowd, but when it's an audience, the audience, if you will, they're great.
Yeah. I'll tell you this funny story. This might be TMI. Oh, well. I'm an open book. I went a long time ago with seeing a psychiatrist, as one does, as you're trying to figure out, I'm an artist, what am I? And I said to him, I get really shy at parties. And he said, or is it the fact that you don't know what to do because you're not the center of attention? And I went, wow, the way I describe it, I'm charming. The way you describe it, I'm a jerk. So that was a long time ago, and I've always thought that. Like, yep, I am. I read something recently, too, that, like, artists, like people who want to create, particularly interactive or public artists as opposed to painters, also need quiet time just to recharge.
Yeah.
Just need to, like, okay, I'm by myself, and I'm just thinking by myself, because in a little while I'm going to explode outward again.
Yeah.
So I went, that resonates with me.
Yeah, because I guess we just assume that charming people or entertaining people are on all the time. But no, they do need, otherwise they'd just burn out, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I do admire, there's a couple people who I know in this town who are brilliant performers, who just seem to always be on.
Yeah.
And I just go, wow, I just have no idea what that is. I often go see movies by myself, read by myself, just to, you know, just get away from people. But put me in front of a crowd, and I'm raising funds for charity or entertaining people in exotic countries. Or right now I've been flown out to Kelowna the last 3 years to entertain at a Christmas party. It's like, okay. If you want to fly me out, if you think I'm that entertaining, awesome.
Yeah. Is what you're doing, this career of yours, is this what you've always wanted to do? Is this what you thought you would do, say, when you were a kid, that you wanted to do?
To be honest with you, no. When I was in high school, I was super, super shy. Mortally so. I didn't take drama, although I was attracted to it. I was afraid to. And it wasn't until I did some theater sports that I, because the yearning became too great, that I suddenly sort of came alive and went, this is what I want to do. But the minute high school was over, I went into a funk because I was like, I don't know what I want to do. So I went to India. So I came about it slowly. Auditioned for Studio 58. Didn't get in the first time. Auditioned for it a second time. Got in the second time. Just slowly started doing stuff that interests me. My mom told me back when she was alive, my first words as a kid, as a baby, were, what's that? What's it?
Huh.
I've always had a very curious mind, and I want to try stuff. And I go, hey, I've never done that before. Let's try this. So that's why I'm a little bit scattered. Hopefully in a pleasing way.
Yeah, no, and I mean, and you know, we've known of you for years. We've seen you perform in the sort, a lot of us, and you know, you're one of those people that just entertaining, you know? I mean, you know that if even if we see you, say, in the lobby at something, like I've seen you in a lobby at something, you know, there's the party.
Yeah, it's fun, and that's what I'm trying to create with this show with Heathers is I want people to be moved, I want them to be shocked, I want them to be turned on, and I want them to laugh, and I want them to cry. Like, in Act 2, when things start getting darker, it's quite moving. I've got a stunning, stunning cast that one moment you're like, oh, and then the next moment you're like, no, right? So it's a roller coaster experience. Putting the show on has been a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I want the actual show to be a roller coaster for the audience as well.
In directing Heathers, the musical, what does that do for the instincts that you have as a performer? I mean, it probably informs that and makes that better, doesn't it?
Yeah, one of the things that's a little annoying sometimes is when I'm giving a note, I stand up because I'm actually trying it out for myself. I approach it from an actor's point of view, or I think about it in an actor's in my actor head. When I'm going, hey, I think there needs to be a little bit more naivety. He doesn't know what's going to happen, so he's curious, and then he becomes horrified. Yeah, he's horrified by what he sees, right? So I come at it from an actor's point of view a lot of times because that's where my brain goes to. What would I do if I was in that role?
Yeah.
Not that I give them line reads or anything. I just give them consideration. Sometimes I'll do that. I'll say a line. Mm-hmm. I go, don't do it that way. You find your own way, but just give me that flavor.
Yeah. Well, David, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And the break a leg, as I say, thanks for your time today and all the best for the season.
Yeah, people better get their tickets. It's going to sell out.
Absolutely,
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
The website for more tickets, thecultch.com. Heathers the Musical runs the 6th through the 17th of January, 2016 at the York Theatre here on Vancouver's Commercial Drive. David C. Jones, its director, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.